I'm Krista Hepburn, and you're listening to County Grows. Today I have on the phone with me Quentin Wine, a member of the Prince Edward County Master Gardeners Group, who today is going to give us a refresher on composting. Hi, Quentin.
Hi, Krista. Thank you so much for letting me join you today. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for letting our group giving our group the opportunity to reach out and support our community. We're always available to provide free gardening advice, and you can find us online at pecmastergardeners.ca.
Which is excellent. So, what is composting all about?
Well, it's kind of a timely thing because now all of our plants are reaching the end of their lives. Going into winter, we want to try to take advantage of them. So composting is the purposeful recycling of organic matter such as leaves and food scraps into a valuable soil additive and fertilizer that can enrich our soil and plants. I say purposeful because anything that grows is eventually going to decompose no matter what you do or don't do with it. But composting is about using these materials to our benefit and to improve our gardens and soils.
And the result of this is better gardens. Else does it do for us?
That's right. Compost is an excellent source of nutrients for our soils, and so it improves our gardens, but it does provide other benefits for our community. Composting breaks down organic materials through aerobic decomposition, meaning it encourages microorganisms that require oxygen to break down materials nearer to their elemental form. When we don't compost, organic materials can just pile up and use a different anaerobic process that creates biogases such as methane and carbon dioxide. And these greenhouse gases are not good for us or our ecosystem. Soils with compost added are also better at retaining water, lessening the need for and therefore conserving water in our community. And composting returns organic matter into elemental form or close to it. It contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, also traces of other essential elements like calcium, magnesium, iron, and zinc. And introducing these elements back into our gardens reduces the reliance on fertilizers to achieve the same effects without the harmful ecological effects of buying commercial fertilizers.
Well, that's a lot of benefits. So where does one begin?
Well, it depends on how serious you are about wanting to obtain results. Physical capabilities, of course, and what you want to achieve. Really, it boils down to two approaches using either hot or cold composting. So cold composting involves very little effort. It essentially is just allowing nature to take its course. The drawback of cold composting is that you are going to get a very natural result. And that might include a result that includes any of the harmful pathogens, bacteria, fungi, protozoa, worms, and other parasites, as well as weed seeds that would also survive naturally in your finished product. So also you're looking at a period of up to 2 years to get a usable product from cold composting. Now hot composting involves more effort in order to improve the conditions and accelerate the process. So this method requires considerable efforts to maintain an optimal mixture of carbon and nitrogen by judiciously adding and mixing different decomposing organic wastes. It also means balancing the air and water available in the mixture and to attract and support the organisms that thrive in an oxygen-rich environment. Under ideal conditions, you could have the final compost product in 4 weeks to 12 months. If managed correctly, the high temperature of the pile will destroy most weeds, plant diseases, pesticides, and herbicides, plus any bug larvae or eggs. So this approach provides a much shorter response time with the usable material resulting in anywhere from 1 to 12 months, depending on the inputs and conditions.
It sounds like the managed approach is the way to go, I guess, but how can gardeners adjust the inputs?
Well, basically, you have greens and browns that you can put into your composting. So greens are the ingredients which add nitrogen that is abundant in fresh, recently vital organic materials like fresh grass clippings or food scraps and that kind of thing. Browns are older, drier organic materials that have dried out and turned brown. These can include dead leaves and plants of almost any kind, like woody prunings, reeds, and so forth, although you don't want anything larger than, let's say, half a finger size in your compost. Some papers and cardboards can also be composted, although you should avoid magazines because they have a lot of ink and chemicals on them. Those are not good for our compost. Overall, you want to continually add a mixture of 2 to 4 parts of browned material to 1 part green. And ideally, you would wind up with a mixture that was about as wet as a wrung-out sponge.
So your ingredients are greens and browns, and what else?
Well, the mixture needs to remain moist with and have plenty of oxygen for the microorganisms to use. So ideally, it should be about as I said, wet as a wrung-out sponge. It should have access to oxygen. So there's two ways of doing that. You can either mix it occasionally, or you can insert pipes or tubes into the materials that can get oxygen deep down into where the decomposition is taking place.
So where does the hot come in?
When you have a good balance of greens and browns and air and water, you will have created the ideal conditions for aerobic organisms to thrive. And in doing so, they, when they're consuming the decomposing materials, they create heat. And the pile ultimately will reach an optimal temperature of about 55 to 60 degrees Celsius, or about 130 to 140 Fahrenheit. Under certain conditions, the same chemicals and other activity going on can create a very high temperatures and even catch fire, often in cases where sound dust and other materials are in storage. So it's not a bad idea to be aware of this and keep your composting area free of combustible materials.
That's a handy tip. Good to know, and something to watch out for. And what other things should we be aware of?
Well, there are some things that should never go into your compost. So pet wastes, like feces and cat litter, they can harmful bacterial and parasites, and they don't really contain any beneficial material, so those should not be thrown into compost. Bones and scraps from meat or fish or poultry, they produce an odor, and they also attract pests like mice and other carnivores. Dairy products also produce odor and attract pests, and so do eggshells. But on the other hand, eggshells also can provide a good source of calcium to your compost. So it's a good idea to take your eggshells and just rinse them out and crush them up before you add them to your compost. Leaves or twigs from black walnut trees and walnut shells, these contain juglone, which is a toxic material that walnuts and walnut trees and that tree family produce that is very toxic to other plants. So we don't want that going into the compost. Coal ash and charcoal, they also contain compounds that harm plants. Large pieces of wood, you don't want those going in, because fungi are determined to destroy or decompose wood, and that will attract fungi to your compost bin. Fats and cooking oils and grease, those also produce odors and attract pests. And pesticide-treated lawn trimmings, they can bring those pesticides into your compost. So you don't want those in. Baked goods like bread and buns and that sort of thing also attract mice. You don't want those going in there. And plants that are especially an important one is plants that are diseased or infested with insects. You don't want to put those in your compost, because of course those may thrive in there and you may introduce them to plants in future when you're using your compost. On this one, the leaves and deadfall around the yard can be a major and beneficial ingredient to your composting, and it's important to always monitor your health of your trees throughout the gardening year. To note that you want to keep the dead in the fall from having those fungi and viruses on them and having them get into your composting. Another thing too from experience is I would avoid fibrous plants like palms and yucca plants and Dracaenia, for example. Those leaves are really tough and they take a long time to degrade. When you want to use your compost, you don't want to wind up with those long pieces of Dracaenia leaves or what have you. So rather than having to filter them out at the end, it's best not to put them in to begin with.
And I have a wood burning fireplace. What about those ashes?
You know, wood ash is a great liming agent, and I've always been taught to throw the fireplace ashes onto the garden from when I was a young boy. It's a good source of calcium and magnesium, and in small amounts it can be a really beneficial additive. But it's important that it should only be wood ash, though. If you're burning artificial logs or anything else that's artificial composting, and especially any kind of chemical additive, you know, there are things that some people burn in their fireplace that create certain colors and so forth. Mm-hmm. You don't want that, any of that stuff. You want it to be pure, completely burnt wood ash.
So how do you know when your compost is ready?
Important that the material that you wind up is thoroughly decomposed. Well, you may wind up with smells or attracting pests. Your compost should have a texture of that's crumbly and smooth without really being able to recognize any of the inputs. It should have the smell of petrichor. That's the smell that you get after it rains and you can smell the soil, so to speak. Traces of ammonia or sour odors means that the compost needs more time to mature. So you really need to smell your compost, and it should smell good. Mm. So the color should be dark and rich. The size of your pile should be about 1/3 of what you originally started with. It's difficult to determine that if you are composting on an ongoing basis, but, you know, basically you are decomposing compostable materials, they shrink down to about 1/3 of their size, original size. Also, the temperature should be about within 10 degrees of what you're adding it to. Composting does involve the creation of heat, and you don't want to be putting too hot products on your soil. It's also a good practice to screen your compost before using it so that any larger pieces or parts that have not really completely decomposed, you can just screen them out and turn them into the next batch.
And does composting require a big setup?
It really doesn't. You know, you can just use a pile on the ground. Some people who like to keep things neat and tidy, they might build a composter that will contain it, that both holds the material and it enables the air and the water to penetrate, the person to mix it without spilling it over the sides or what have you. But really, you can just compost using a pile on the ground. There's all kinds of designs for composters that you can buy off the shelf or that you can build for yourself. And it's all about how much time and effort you're willing to dedicate to the whole activity. I have to admit for myself that having a container of some kind makes things easier in the long run because it's kind of contained and neat.
Well, Quentin, you've given us so much information and we're so enlightened. Thank you so much.
Always my pleasure, Krista. Thank you so much.
I'm Krista Hepburn. I've been speaking with Quentin Wine, Master Gardener, on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county.
Thanks so